Hello, this is Burton.
Hey, Burton, this is Todd with BigMusicGeek.com. How are you?
Good, Todd. Thanks for calling.
Hey, not a problem. Is this still the right time?
Absolutely.
Perfect.
Right on time.
I appreciate that.
No worries. I appreciate you calling.
Oh, of course. Just want to try to get some good podcast audio here. Give me one second. Now, the new recording took right around a decade to complete. What were the main obstacles with that happening?
For the new recording?
Yes.
Well, there was the main obstacle. I guess the main obstacle was finding a label to release it, really. Everything else we were able to achieve, we had the songs, but we needed to record them. So, there's a couple obstacles. Being able to record it and then finding a label. The Pledge Music campaign and the failure of it was a setback, but it didn't become an obstacle. It just became a setback that we had to just re-divert everything and just reassess. But I knew that we would have to complete a full record for a label to hear it, to convince them to release an album by essentially the Watchers, because no one wanted, there was interest, but there wasn't really anyone wanting to take a chance on it. So I think that was probably the biggest obstacle.
How did you ultimately end up recording at Northstone Studios? That sounds like quite the facility.
Yeah, it's a beautiful facility. It's not a big place. It's relatively small, smallish. We recorded Northstone because I had met Jace Lewis, and it's because of MySpace is how I met Jace Lewis back in 2005, 2006. We just started communicating together on MySpace because he put a post up saying something about he was being managed by Darth Vader. So I was like, what? So I texted, messaged him and asked him what all that was about. And he explained to me that David Prowse was helping him manage his career. And that's how we started communicating. We just became friends. As time went on, we kept communicating, and it was a few years later that Fear Factory was on tour in the UK, and he came to a Manchester show, and we hung out afterwards, and we just kept talking and talking. Time went by, he was telling me about the studio he was building, and it was quite interesting because he was building a beautiful studio in the countryside of Wales. And he's building a modern analog studio, which completely intrigued me. And so there was just the right circumstances where I was already in Europe, and he had just finished building his studio, and he invited me over. So I made a trip from Europe to the UK and, had my guitar and just went over there and we just started recording, and I had two ideas that I want to record. I had had an idea for Ghost Heart. I had the guitar written for it, and then an idea for the guitars for The End Is Always the Beginning. So we recorded two songs in 2 weeks, with drums and guitars, bass, and vocals. So that is just a circumstance, just a series of fortunate events that led us to Northstone, really.
No, I understand you guys captured an unexpected vocal when you were doing the vocals for the title track, correct?
Ooh, yeah, that was, yes. A voice from the ether, as we say. Not sure what it is, but You know, it's unexplainable. So what you're talking about is there's an intro to the song Apocrypha. And what you hear is a wooden door creaking open. Then you hear a whisper. And then you hear the wooden door creaking and shutting. Now, that all happened while I was in the vocal booth. At some point, I'm not sure. But we were recording the song Apocrypha. And, I was, let me stop and kind of go backtrack. So Jace's studio, Jace built a studio attached to a 250-year-old manor. The manor stands on the grounds of an ancient monastery. So some of the stones for the monastery are still on the grounds in the area. So he used these stones to build his studio next to the manor, so it's connected. So there's a lot of, ancient energy there already. And while I was there recording, there was some things would happen. There's some small things that would happen. Like every night when we close up, we just clean up the coffee station, tea area, the little refrigerator area. We clean that up, sort it out. And we lock all the doors and windows and we would leave. And we come back in the morning. No one has access to this place. Jace has the only key. We come in the morning. Happened a few times where we go to the coffee station area and there's things on the floor, just like thrown off the floor, thrown from the shelf down to the floor. And we would just say, well, that's weird. And we just explain it away easily because that's what we do. We try and explain things logically. So up until a point, we were able to explain things logically. So the refrigerator vibrated so much that it shook everything off the shelf and fell on the floor, that kind of thing. So with that in mind, back to the day of the voice report, the recording of the voice, we're recording the song Apocrypha. We were trying to. And that day started by me going to the vocal booth. And I'm standing in the vocal booth in front of Mike, and Jace's trying to hear me. There's nothing coming through. I'm looking at him through the window. So he's in the control room. I'm on the other side of the window, studio window, in the vocal booth that we built. And we're looking at each other. I can hear him in the headphones, but he can't hear me. So he's trying everything. So he comes out and he checks the microphone's connections. And so the microphone's connected as a the cable's connected to the microphone. He followed the cable all the way to the multi-input that was in the drum room, which is next to the same room where the refrigerator and the shelves are. And he followed the cable, and that particular cable was pulled out from the multi-input. And to do that, you have to actually grasp it because there's clips, and you have to grasp it and pull it out. And I looked at him and go, why would you do that? He goes, I didn't do that. Did you do that? I'm like, no. So okay. So we couldn't explain that. So we started recording, and we were doing vocals and probably working for about 3 or 4 hours. And then we decided to take a break for me to take a break and for Jace to do some cleaning up of some files. And as he was cleaning up some files, he saw this weird waveform at the end of one track, like way after the end. And and it was after the recording was done. So the track had finished, but it was somehow still recording. And as we were listening to it, we heard the door open. And then you hear all of a sudden you hear like the gain go all the way up, like some kind of electrical frequency, some electrical disturbance. So the gain goes, and then you hear this creepy whisper into the microphone. Like, what the fuck is that? So we rewind it and we play it again. Like, what is that? And it's, you hear syllables. Hear, it's like someone's saying something. And then you hear the door close. And the strange thing is, if I had walked through the door and I would walked into the door and kept it open, you would have heard Jason and I talking, because what the game just went up so high. You would have definitely heard us talking, or you would have heard something, but you don't hear anything except this whisper. And it's like, just so creepy. We couldn't explain it. You know, we were always together. Jason wouldn't do it. If I whispered into the microphone of that kind of game, it would have, you know, just blown out the whole component together. So we listened to it again and again. I'm like, you know what? That is the intro to this song. So it's a whisper we can't explain. It's something we can't even decipher. I don't even know what language it is in. It just sounds like someone saying something.
How did you ultimately end up being signed to Dissonant Records?
That's because of Jace. Jace made that happen. Jace is, you know, he is a artist in his own right. He's well known in the UK. He's well known in Europe. He's toured with Gary Newman. He's done his tour on his own. He's done very well for himself. So, you know, labels contact him, and just this one, this, and I guess they contact him wanting, you know, oh, you're interested in signing with us or something like that. The label Dissonance approached him at one point for some licensing, and Jace didn't have anything, but he goes, I've been working on this. And just so happens, the owner of Dissonance is someone I've worked with before with Fear Factory. His name's Steve Beattie. And so he was very much interested of what we were doing, and he wanted to hear more. And so it's because of, you know, Jace made that happen. So we just kept talking, and one thing led to another, and here we are, Dissonance putting a record out.
Nice. It's nice when things come together without too much struggle.
It is, you know, it takes time sometimes. A series of fortunate events eventually made it happen. You know, luckily I wasn't trying to rush it. I wasn't desperate. I wasn't trying to, you know, push it forward. But you know, I knew that in time things would start working and things, people would start taking notice, and that's exactly what happened.
How did the cover art for this new record get conceptualized? It's a great, kind of almost haunting concept.
Thank you. It's something that the artist and I worked on. His name is Matthew Grundy. Initially, what I wanted, there was this photograph by this artist named Nick Brandt. He's a South African photographer. And he had this series of images, black and white images, from some salt lake in South Africa, where the salt is so dense and the air that things that die start pretty much mummifying in the air from the salt content in the air. And he had this one image of a dove, just like, whoa, it just blew my mind. It was just like this dove, it was all crusty, and it looks like a mummy, but it was a dove, and it's just insane. I contacted Nick Brandt directly. It's like asking him, hey, can we use this photograph for an album cover? And he respectfully declined, because he just doesn't want his art to be part of any type of musical trend. Understandable. So with this image, I loved everything about it. I loved the textures. I loved the color. So we started working with this artist named Matt. I showed Matt the art, and he goes, oh, okay. I want this feel, but we can't use this, obviously. So he came up with a few ideas, and this is the one that just like, wow, that's it. This looks like a fallen angel, you know, leaning on his knees, just you know, in repentance. And it just felt like that was the one.
As far as songwriting is concerned, how does your approach with Ascension of the Watchers differ from what you've done in the past with Fear Factory?
Well, first of all, I write the songs in Ascension of the Watchers. All the songs come from me initially, where I will sit down with a guitar and I just start playing what I'm feeling. You know, it's either I sit down at a guitar or a piano to just start playing what I'm feeling, you know, how I'm feeling at that point. And usually something, it's an event that's happened that really affects me emotionally. For me, music is my therapy, so that's what I do. I sit down and I just work it out. I find the chords that are resonating with how I'm feeling. So I just come out, I start writing. And so I come up with arrangements, rudimentary arrangements, but an arrangement no less. And then I take that arrangement and I went either go to John's house in Pennsylvania, or I went to my friend Adu's place in Brooklyn, and I would demo these so I could remember them so we could start building upon them. So it's quite different from Fear Factory, because I was just, the music I would write, no one was interested for Fear Factory. So I was just, okay, I'll just do the lyrics and vocals, and you know, the melodies I come up with, you can use the melodies to write keyboard parts with and stuff like that. So it's different. So I would say that Ascension of the Watchers is far more personal than anything else I've ever done.
Well, Burton, I really appreciate you taking the time. I'll make sure that this gets blasted out on all of our social medias, and I'll make sure you guys get a link to everything as soon as it goes live.
Awesome, Todd.
Always, I appreciate you taking the time. I've been talking to you on and off since 2001, so this is just great to talk to you again.
Yeah, I remember your name. I was like, oh, here we go again.
hope to see you out on the road eventually, one way or the other, one band or the other, so.
Oh, my gosh, and we're all ready to be on the road again so badly.
Oh, yeah, I can't even imagine.
But, Todd, thank you very much for your time.
You bet, man. Have a great day.
And hopefully, when we tour, please come see us.
We'll definitely do that, man.
All right, cheers,
brother. Take it easy, man.